Happy Thursday. The Ira Kaufman podcast is on right here at One Buck Palace, starring, of course, the great sage of Tampa Bay sports. The man is everywhere, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee DeKemper is back from assignment and various travels. And we are here with plenty to talk about. Mr. Ira, how are you?
We're doing well. We got the gang back together. It's good to see DeKemper back from his journeys. I'm sure we're going to hear a story or two from Atlanta. Steve, I want to start out with my appreciation for our listeners that have expressed their sympathy for what we've gone through with the little Dante. Some people have tweeted some things. Much appreciated. First time I'm going through something like that. It's no picnic. It takes a while to get over if you ever do. Lee, very loyal dog, my first dog. And 15 years, good life for Dante. And now he's up there with all his playmates. I don't know if you've ever been through that with a pet, Lee, but it's not anything you'd wish on anybody.
Yeah, I remember growing up, my dad always had a hunting dog or two. And, you know, when you put him down, it's not fun.
Didn't you have a pet tarantula when you were about 11?
I was going to say snake, but okay. But I was shocked to hear about this when I was listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
I saw somebody, it might have been Javier, referenced it on Twitter. And like, what? Because I remember it couldn't have been a month ago. You said you brought Dante to the vet. And, I knew he had some illnesses. I knew he was old. But you said the doctor, if I quote you correctly, the doctor had told, or the vet had told you, he's not ready yet.
That was about a month ago. But last week, the vet said it was time. Mm. And so, and then on Monday, he took a turn for the worse. And, we had to bring him in. It's rough. It's rough, Lee. It's like Steve said, it's like a member of the family.
Yeah, 15 years, my gosh. What are you going to do now, Ira? You used to use the con with your wife that you had to take Dante for a walk so you could flirt with Agnes down the street. And that excuse is gone now. So what are you going to do?
I'm thinking gerbils. Somehow I'm going to take the gerbils for a walk, but I don't think that's going to work, Steve. But look, we got other things on our mind. We're going to go from a rough story involving a dog to the elevation of a position coach to a coordinator, Steve. There's much on our plate today.
Of course, you're presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, your great presenting sponsors. Last podcast, we talked about the ousting of Mike Smith. Today, here we are at One Buck, 45 minutes ago. We're in front of Mark Duffner, defensive coordinator, the new guy in town. Your thoughts on his first chatter with the media?
What struck me the most is the stark difference between Mark Duffner on our podcast, where he was freewheeling, joking, you know, just in a jovial mood with no filter. And that's what happens, Lee. When you get to that podium, that means you're a coordinator. And, you know, everybody's looking at you. You know, all the juice withdraws and you're pure vanilla. I don't blame Mark Duffner. I'd probably be the same way, Lee. We didn't get much out of him today. I don't know what you got. He's going to watch from the sidelines instead of, you know, that might be the only one of the few nuggets out there. How many times did he say, I don't want to give away any trade secrets going into the Cleveland game?
Two or three, but what I noticed, he invoked Woody Hayes every other couple minutes.
Yeah, Woody Hayes made a huge impression on him.
Yeah, right? I mean, I counted four different times he invoked, without prompting, he invoked Woody Hayes' name. And for people who don't know the history, Mark Duffner was a grad assistant. He played for Lou Holtz at, was it North Carolina State or William & Mary? I can't remember which. And Holtz, at one point in his career, was a grad assistant for Woody Hayes. So he had a connection with Hayes. And
sent out a bunch of resumes.
Yeah, so he sent out 100 resumes. 96 told him to go take a hike. And of the four, one was Ohio State. And that when he interviewed with Hayes, it wasn't an interview. Hayes talked and he listened.
Isn't that interesting?
But he said that he admitted, you know, Lou Holtz helped him too.
He probably had that job before the interview even started because he had a recommendation. But then Hayes wanted to give him his philosophy of football. Well, and you'd be a fool not to listen.
Yeah, I know this will irritate Steve because we're not talking Bucks here, but coolest thing I ever heard about Woody.
I'm not irritated in the slightest.
Because I'll get like three sentences out, and Steve, I can tell he wants to talk about Devontae Bond. But anyway, the greatest story I heard about Woody Hayes about what he meant as a person, not a coach. I've heard of some Scott Brantley. I've seen interviews with Archie Griffith. When he recruited the player, he never talked football. It was always what Ohio State could do for him as far as education, as far as careers. He never talked football.
That sounds like the Dungy Chuck Knoll tree, where it's all about outside interests, What makes you tick?
Community.
Community. Family. And then we'll get around to X's and O's. But, Steve, what were some of your takeaways from Coach Duffner?
Before we get really cooking, let's tell everybody about the big news over at Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa. The brand new 2019 XT4 crossovers are in and ready for immediate delivery. 2019, Ira, at Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa. Take one home during the Big Win sales event for just $459 a month. Lease, yes. New XT4s, only $459. Beautiful crossover it is. Rush to Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or click edmoorescadillactampa.com. The dealer has all the little details. Definitely get to the website, edmoorescadillactampa.com. And your friends, Ira, at Ed Moore's Cadillac, Brandon, you know, fabulous there.
I was there last week.
I know. I didn't realize how much private time you had with John Cooper talking politics and all kinds of things. You are the sage of Tampa Bay sports. People don't realize this. I want to emphasize that you took your sageness to Ed Moore's Cadillac, Brandon.
Contrary to popular opinion, I did not ask John Cooper about why Noah Spence isn't playing. I did not. And by the way, they went out the next night and scored 8 goals and spanked John Tortorella in the process. So Cooper was a happy man all the way around going into that. His wife came in. She went into a side room. She read a novel for about 2 hours. And I was there with the lovely Anita from Ed Moore's Cadillac, Brandon. And Steve, I got to tell you, I had some time to look at some of the cars in that showroom. The colors, the vehicles, and I'm colorblind. I'm colorblind, but I was dazzled, absolutely dazzled.
As a colorblind person, what's your favorite color?
Well, I'm red-green colorblind, so, you know, I'm in white right now. I'll stick with that.
I got you, Sage. Ed Moore's Cadillac, Brandon, on Causeway Boulevard. Beautiful showroom, so easy to get to. EdmooresCadillacBrandon.com is the website to get it started. EdmooresCadillacBrandon.com. Ira, while Lee chatting there, reminded me of when you interviewed a Joe Bucks fan. It was, Ira, shut up and listen. This is how it's going down.
That's when he tried to hit you up for a free burger.
You know how hard it is for me to keep my mouth shut? That brings me back to the famous Tom McEwen advice for me when I was replacing McEwen on the Hall of Fame committee. And it was in Detroit, in 2005. And I asked him for advice, and McEwen goes, "Keep your mouth shut, Kaufman. It's year one. Keep your mouth shut." And I did.
Well, what else do you get from Duffner today? Any feel? Anything else stand out? Yes, he'll be on the sidelines, and let's bring that up because a lot of fans have strong opinions on that for whatever reason.
Fox is going to be upset because now they can't show Mark Duffner holding his head in his hands and in the booth.
Mike Smith.
Duffner starting Sunday. In the booth, how many times did they show Mike Smith? I mean, it was incredible.
Well, I was at the game.
And you were at the game.
Yeah, so I didn't get to see much of the TV feed because, you know, I'm looking at the game. And you just reminded me, I got a Duffner story from the game. Got the hint on Twitter that they were constantly showing Smith.
Constantly.
Because they knew he was 3 feet under, so to speak.
You don't see the focus on a assistant coach up in a booth. It's rare to see that kind of focus. They must have showed it 5 times.
What really struck me about that is if you go back to the Bears game, and we talked about this on the podcast, I even joked you were more likely to see Lovie Smith in the stands laughing at the Bucs defense. They didn't show Mike Smith in Chicago in the booth at all. They weren't going to him at all. Yet here he was a popular figure with the Fox cameras. Did they know something?
Well, part of the reason was after the Bears game, heading into the bye week, Mike Smith was the story here
True.
In Tampa.
True.
And in that regard, Steve, we can't be surprised by what happened. Going back to Duffner and some of the impressions I had today at One Buck, I have a very strong impression that Duffner has some very tangible and significant changes in mind for that defense. That doesn't mean they're going to a 3-4. Forget that stuff. You don't do that in 4 days. But specifically, the way the linebackers are going to be utilized, I don't know if that means Lavani's going to blitz more, Quan Alexander's going to take a deeper drop. But my point is, Steve, up to this point, all Duffner could do was suggest to Mike Smith. He might take one of his thoughts. He might not. And Duffner understood that. Smith's the final arbiter. Now he's going to be in charge, and he's going to get to implement his own ideas. And Steve, Duffner's smart enough, and we've talked to him on his podcast, you'd be a fool to keep doing what Mike Smith was doing and expect a different result. There's going to be some significant changes that we see starting against Cleveland. There has to be.
I'm going to combine both you guys into one thought. I listened to the podcast Tuesday, and you'd mentioned, you know, Shiano got more out of Lavonte David than anybody. And what did he do?
And Bill Sheridan.
Yeah. And what did Lavonte do? He blitzed, and he had tackles for losses.
Yes.
Well, Steve always brings up how Duffner worked for Dick LeBeau. We've all heard the term Blitzburg. Part of that is because Dick LeBeau, then defensive coordinator of the Steelers, would blitz everybody at all times. It was crazy. So I would not be shocked if they utilized Lavonte David a little bit more as far as blitzing, because, you know, he's just that good. And he showed with Shiano that he can do it. Now, an interesting thing, and it brings me up to the Mark Duffner story I had in Atlanta. It's not really a story, but it's an observation that I saw. And when I'm at games, rather than trying to watch the replay, the network feed, I try to get a scene of the bench. What's going on the bench? Who's talking to who? Who's at the trainer's table? Whatever. I don't always do that because I'm so focused on the field. And, you know, sometimes I get tunnel vision, especially with using binoculars. But I checked out the bench at one point, just randomly checked the bench. And there was Duffner talking to Lavonte David. He had his arms around Lavonte. It was sort of a hug, but he had his arms on his shoulders. And it was like a father and son, like a father is giving advice on how to pick up chicks or something, you know. A very family bonding. Lavonte was listening. And he was, you could tell it was like he was giving fatherly soft advice, gentle advice. I have no idea what that was about, but I just thought it was almost a tender moment in a violent game.
Was Jason Light sitting behind you on Sunday, Mr. DeCamp?
Yeah, and I'll just say this. And you know, what we see in the press box really isn't for public consumption, because that's why it's the press box.
But at one point, you usually give us you know, a little bit of color.
Well, he was sitting behind me and maybe 3 to 4 seats to my left. And at one point in the first quarter, this is what I heard.
That's not the first time.
Loud, audible sigh. Just, I think it may have been the Falcons that scored their second touchdown. Just this loud, audible sigh.
You know, Steve, one thing I want to bring up is something that the great Derek Brooks told me. And it's part of my Wednesday column. And Brooks brought it up. I didn't even ask him about this.
You mean on the identity Tampa Bay?
That is absolutely correct, Steve. The identity Tampa 2, which...
The identity Tampa Bay, Tampa 2 show, starring Ira Kaufman and Derek Brooks, seen twice a week.
And
Joe
sponsored
Buck's
by Caldeco Air Conditioning. Very nice, Steve.
Well, they don't cut us a check, so we don't mention that. Go ahead.
But Brooks will appreciate it. Anyway,
you know, like Raymond James, they won't cut us a check.
Lee, we were talking about, you know, the preview for the Cleveland game, and Brooks said... Look, I know it's only week 7 and 6th game for the Bucks, but this has the feel. He almost said smell, but he said feel of a must-win game. That's what Derek Brooks said. And you know what? I can't argue with him, Steve. I don't care that it's week 7. 3-3, you can deal with. You can work with 3-3. 2-4 with a 4-game losing streak, going on the road for 2 games, that's a recipe for disaster, Steve. You know, the importance of this game cannot be overstated, Lee.
It's not so much week 7. It's not so much they can go 2-4, they can stay 3. It's who they're playing. How many times have we mentioned Cleveland South? The Buccaneers have turned into Cleveland South. And Steve, what's Todd Wright been saying for months?
We love Todd's fantasy podcast. He you know, said before the season, we mentioned it on one of the Spectrum shows, he made it clear, you know, back in August, hey, if the Bucs lose to the Browns at home, that's going to be the kickoff, the end of the regime. And
he didn't even say if they were in a 3-game losing streak. He didn't even say
that. No, I mean, his assumption was they'd get off to, you know, maybe 1-2, get to 2-3, and here we are, and that's where we are, 2-3.
And, Steve, who happens to be the only NFL team with a longer playoff drought than your Buccaneers? The Cleveland Browns.
Sage, you know, I know Mr. Brooks tends to listen to the podcast. Come on, that's as obvious a statement as the sun is shining on a sunny
day.
But
Brooks doesn't say things like that.
I know. Yeah. That illustrates how out there it is that, hey, you know, Derek's not going to say a bunch of controversial, you know, hot take things about the Bucs.
He's going to say it's the most important game because it's the next game on the schedule. That's what head coaches say.
That's true.
And that's what Dirk Cutter's going to say.
If they lose the Browns, and I was thinking about this since the Atlanta game, how can Dirk Cutter save his job? Because, you know, I didn't know that if Smith would be fired. I was going on the assumption that Smith was here for the duration of the season. So how can Dirk Cutter save his job? Because, as Mike Lombardi said, Mike Smith's going to lose Dirk Cutter his job. And I was thinking, you know what? If Cutter has the offense humming like it is.
That's Steve's scenario.
That would save
him. And Jameis is playing well.
Yeah, that would save him. Of course, you know, it would be similar to when the Glazers stepped in and got rid of Shula. Mike Shula, that is. Because the defense didn't need to be monkeyed with. It was the offense. And I was thinking very similar. You know, you got one of the best offenses in the NFL for a couple of years now, but to be honest. Even though they weren't scoring last year, they were moving the ball. So obviously the offense, if it continues this way, really doesn't need to be tinkered with. It's the defense. So I was thinking that, again, that was under the assumption that Smith was going to be here for the duration of the season. Obviously, he's gone. So now you get rid of the defensive coordinator. You get new blood, not so much new blood, but a new voice. A new point of view in there. And they lose to the Browns. And everybody talks about how the Bucks are Cleveland South. You lose to the Browns, you're now Cleveland. You're now the worst woe-begone franchise in the NFL.
Steve, I don't know if I totally buy your scenario where...
Well, I didn't even give a scenario.
Well,
what
you're
are you
saying
talking
if they're averaging, if they finish averaging 28, 30 points and Winston finishes strong, you could make the argument, hey, you put in a new defensive coordinator, a stud, and Cutter keeps his job. My counter argument is if they're 6-10, Cutter's got to take the responsibility for being 6-10.
True, but also,
he's in charge of the staff.
Oh, I agree with you, Ira. Look, if you go 6-10 with a great offense, you're a bad head coach, right? Bad head coach.
Even if one side of the ball is playing well,
exactly.
Isn't this to use the Joel Glazer line? Isn't this an oversimplification? I mean, you're talking about a guy who didn't have his starting quarterback for the first three games at a brutal schedule, and he survived that. That, to me, is coaching.
But, Lee, that works if you were 0-3 after those three games.
No.
Fitzpatrick put the Bucks in good shape, and now you can't go 6-10.
How could you not give Cutter some credit for that?
Oh, he deserves the credit.
That's what I mean. To me, that's good coaching.
Yeah, the hypothetical was 6-10.
Yeah,
that was
the
hypothetical.
Okay.
So if he finishes 6-10 after...
I was thinking what you said, 8-8.
You know, Steve, I got another thing in my mind for Duffner and the defense, and I've been throwing it out there for weeks, and I'm going to keep throwing it out there. I threw it out in the locker room today to the man involved.
Jeff Ryan?
I had a long talk with him. How about moving JPP around a little bit? How about moving him around? Now, the counter-argument is, well, he's the only guy playing worth a damn up there at right end. He's comfortable.
Yeah.
I understand that. But I also claim that in training camp, we had guys every other day coming and saying, boy, they got JPP inside. He's a game wrecker. You can't block the guy at defensive tackle. From what I see, and I've been watching, he's playing 90-95% of the time at right defensive end. And he's playing damn well. So there's a counter-argument. Don't move him. He's the only guy playing well. But I say don't let the offensive line get comfortable knowing where he's going to line up. He's that versatile. I want to take advantage, Steve, of his versatility. And I don't think he'd mind.
No, and in a rare – it'll be interesting to watch. In a rare discussion of actual X's and O's, game day X's and O's, Jason Light might have been 3 weeks ago. I got to go back and look. And I'll probably write it up before this.
You saved the tapes too, Steve.
Yeah,
you don't let
the
anything
tapes.
Go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Save the tapes.
Jason Light said on the Buccaneers Radio Network that one of the things he was looking forward to was seeing JPP move around the line more.
See,
like
no,
he
I didn't
did.
Even hear that.
And but it hasn't happened. So hey, you know the GM wants it, which you know goes back to you know Lee's big exhale from the quoting the GM. You know every GM wants to see changes because they don't coach. And here we have a guy who. Buckner obviously thinks he's incredibly versatile. Otherwise, why would he have moved him all over on the line? Remember, it was Buckner who said in preseason, well, I always used to watch GPP and think, man, this guy can rush inside.
Yes.
We already know he could do the left, and now he's on the right, and he's not moving around.
And what did the offensive lineman tell us all during August? The guy's a beast inside.
Yeah.
We can't block him.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's something to keep an eye on.
And this is just an observation. And I know McCoy does a lot of things that a lot of us don't see. Good luck finding an NFL coach who'll say something bad about McCoy. When I'm not talking about a human being, I'm talking about as a football player. Every offensive coach, every NFL head coach,
you
I've
got a game
to,
plan for him.
Oh yeah. And of course, there's a. I don't know if it's a large sect, but it's certainly a loud sect of anti-McCoy. You know, they expected him to get like 8 to 12 sacks. You know, where is he? Doesn't make a play. Oh, you've heard all the excuses. He is really under the microscope of these people now, and with Mike Smith gone. You know, that's guess who's under the microscope? Wow, is he catching heat.
And now he's got a calf injury, Steve.
I ran out to practice today, Ira, to catch the first.
Good hustle, Steve. Good hustle.
First 10 minutes or so, McCoy was not seen on the practice field. Now, Of course, by the time this podcast posts, an injury report will be out, so we're not going to dwell on that. He might have decided to come out after an hour, after getting a little rehab. We don't know, but...
I saw him in the locker room briefly. He didn't look like he was limping.
Did you see a boot? I did not see a boot.
I did not. Calf injuries can be pesky. They really can. Just ask Vita Vea.
Can I ask Ira about this? Now, this is something you guys didn't really elaborate a whole lot on, at least from my perspective, you didn't. You were kind of vague, kind of dicey, kind of...
That's the way we are, Raleigh.
Who ordered the hit?
Who ordered the hit?
And for our listeners, that means the hit on Mike Smith.
Dirk Cutter was unequivocal that it was his decision and his decision alone. I wouldn't expect Dirk Cutter to say anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
My feeling is he was nudged to make the move.
By the G boys or by Light?
I think it comes from the top. I think, you know, they were in Chicago and they were in Atlanta. And I think the thinking was, we gave him a chance to fix it during the bye week. Now he's got to go. That's my read. Steve, am I wrong? They nudged. They nudged it.
Look, we discussed this. I think it's as simple as ownership says, hey, we'd love to see him gone. Dirk, we think you could do better without him, but it's up to you. And then Dirk says, okay, I know what the owners want, and I'll make the call.
Do you get the impression Light was completely on board with the Glazers? My estimation is yes.
But I think so, because, Steve, when you're on the personnel side, like Light, your first inclination is, man, they're not playing up to their talent.
$88 million they spent on defense.
They're not playing up to their talent. That's the way Jason Light has to look at it.
Yeah.
He's a human being. He's not going to say it's the effort or the execution. He's going to say they got to be coached better.
Now, I got to give the guy credit because he did the work on this. Greg Allman of The Athletic did the math.
Did you say Greg Allman?
Yeah,
Greg Allman. Greg Allman.
Not Allman. Not the guy you visited.
Not the
grave.
One who married Cher. All right.
Yeah. By the way, he's dead. His problem. You know. But anyway, Greg Allman, not Allman. Allman, he did the math. If I remember his story correctly, I didn't jot it down on my phone. If they had the number 20th defense, the Bucks would be 4-1.
Scoring defense.
Yeah.
Scoring defense.
They'd be 4-1.
Yeah.
They'd be in first place.
They've scored 27 points in every game but the Chicago game. I made a mistake. I've been saying every game. They didn't do it in the Chicago game.
But the defense is just a sieve.
Four out of five games, they've scored at least 27 points. We don't see that around here, these parts.
It goes back to the must-win thing. It is a must-win. You can't – if we all would have – all four of us would have sat here, three of us. There's no mystery person. I can count, Sage.
Not Joe Henderson? You're always talking about him coming on
he
here.
He says he's coming on.
Is it fair to say all three of us would have sat here in August, and said if Dirk Cutter has a four-game losing streak in the first half of the season, then – he's way underperforming, and he's going to lose his job. Would we all have agreed to that?
Yeah, I believe so. Yes.
I believe so, and that's the reality that he's sitting at because the ownership is looking at big picture.
And I think it even makes it worse when you start 2-0. It makes it even worse.
With a backup quarterback.
Of course it makes it 2-0 because you've shown what you can do, and now you're underperforming. You've got to beat the Browns. It's the Browns, and you're
home. With a rookie quarterback.
With a rookie quarterback.
Now the Browns are doing some things well,
and
Steve,
tell me who's injured on the Bucs offense, Ira.
Well, O.J. Howard's back, so what do you got?
Nobody.
You got
exactly. Right. So you got a high-flying, high-powered offense at home. No rust on
Jameis. Doesn't mean everybody on the offense is clicking. And I mean you, Mr. Beninock.
You're going to split hairs?
He's struggling, Steve, to put it mildly.
I understand, but you're not going to get 11 guys humming all the time. The point is they're loaded on offense. They've proven it.
The running game looked a lot
better. And the Browns are coming in. And, yes, the Browns.
The Browns defense isn't playing bad.
Browns defense is playing okay. But
I have an amazing stat for you, Sage. You're going to love this. Now, the Browns, they don't stop the run very well at all. One of the worst in the league. But they are somehow, and we don't even know what this is like in Tampa, they're somehow holding opposing quarterbacks to 58% completion rate.
That's very good in this day and age.
That's second best in the league, but the Bucs are at 78.
Wow, what a difference.
Think about that, 78. There's
that the first thing that tells me? They got a good pass rush. That's the first thing.
Well, they do have
a
good pass rusher.
And by the way, Mr. Smith at left tackle, here comes Mr. Garrett. Yeah. He was the number one pick in the draft a few years back for a reason. And he's healthy. He's a load. He's a load. Smith might need a little bit of help on Sunday. And you know what? I think they're going to give it to him.
I thought Duffner today, Ira, you know, and I agree with you. He's got to do something different because, you know, come on. Status quo.
Otherwise, what's
work.
The point?
But going back to that sideline thing, I thought he said a very little interesting nuance in there. He said, well, I've done it up from the booth. I've done it at the sideline. for this team, for this situation.
That's right.
I feel I need to be on the sideline, which to me says he's got to get in some faces and make sure the communication is clear in a more direct style. I don't know. You think Dirk Cutter said, I'd rather have you downstairs? I don't know. Where do you think this comes from?
I think this is a Duffner call. He's got a lot of experience. And like Steve said, it's interesting that he said for this particular team, almost meaning, hey, if this was a different type of situation, maybe I would be up in the because you can get a good vantage point from up there. For this particular team, does that mean they got a lot of young guys that need hands-on?
That very well could be.
That very well could be. Especially in the secondary.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I thought what was very interesting was the words he chose when he said, I feel disconnected from the action upstairs. He said, you get a better view. He admitted, you get a better view, but I feel disconnected from the action. So you can tell that's a player's guy. He wants to be in the middle of it.
Now, didn't he sit next to Mike Smith in the booth?
No, he was downstairs.
On game days? He was on the field?
Well, he was on the field last week.
I think he was on the field.
That's why I was asking.
What kind of crowd are we expecting, Steve? What kind of atmosphere? Are there going to be a lot of Cleveland fans in the crowd?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
What are they going to have? Mayfield jerseys everywhere? Mayfield?
The last time the Browns played down here, I saw a guy wearing a Tim Couch jersey.
You know what the scariest part is? I remember going into the Chicago game, and we were doing a little preview, and I said, this is the most nondescript group of targets, wide receivers, that you can imagine. And
the Bears?
And we saw what happened. And here we are again.
No, you're not an Allen Robinson
fan. They have Jarvis Landry, who I believe led the league in receptions.
Yeah, he's deep. He's good.
But he's a possession receiver, Steve. He's not Deshaun Jackson. He's not ever going to average 17 or 18 yards a catch. Then they got a bunch of nobodies, and they have some more injuries over there. But you know what? I can't show any confidence because look what happened. Atlanta's receivers went down in a bunch last week. All they had was Julio Jones, and I didn't see any reason that Jones wasn't running wide open.
Well, you set me up there. You know, a lot of people were pointing to, hey, you know, Mike Smith got something corrected. Look what happened in the second half. They shut him down. Yeah, Mohamed Sanu and Ridley were both out.
Out.
Coincidence?
Out.
No, I don't think so.
Out. And they didn't shut him down in the fourth quarter.
You set me up for another one.
What am I, Steve Nash with an assist man over here?
No, you're more.
I want to be the closer.
You're like, was it Roland? Roland always set up Martin.
Oh, yeah, I'm Carl Reiner with Mel Brooks over there.
Exactly. Right. Pete, and this goes straight to the Jameis haters. Is Jameis perfect? No.
He played a damn good game.
Well, here's the thing.
I'll be the first to
say it. And I think I'm repetitive about this. And in this particular subject, the wordage I'm going to use, the verbiage I'm going to use is apropos. This friggin' organization, the hallmark of this friggin' organization is getting rid of good players. What happened in Atlanta? The last drive Atlanta had, they tried a 57-yard field goal with who? Matt Bryant. You remember him, Bucks fans? You
know, he kicked it so hard and so straight, he busted a hamstring.
Yeah, yeah. And that beat the Bucks. Otherwise, the Bucs, you know, that final drive, you would have only needed
the
field goal.
It's very interesting you bring that up because it shows you two things. Tremendous faith in Matt Bryant, which is justified. He's been fantastic. You don't trust his defense, and if you're Dan Quinn, you wouldn't trust that defense. They're injury ravaged. You think the Bucs
right.
are in bad shape on defense? So going forward, and it relates to my Monday column, I don't know if you saw it, Lee, but maybe Dirk Cutter's got to coach a little differently. In terms of going for it on fourth down, it might be happening all over this league. The Bucks are 3-for-3 on fourth downs. That's a good start.
Well, to that point, Thomas Bassinger on Twitter, I think it was last night, I was flying so much, I had all kinds of time to read Twitter, and he said the Bucks should, you know, the kicker is so undependable with extra points, not so much field goals, but extra points. He thinks that they should go, that Carter should go full-blown Mike Tomlin and go for two-point conversion
time. That's another one that's open totally for debate.
Yeah.
You convert about 50% of those. On a league-wide basis, the Bucs certainly have the targets. Now, they did not convert their two-pointer against Atlanta, and that cost them, Steve. But why'd they do that? Because you missed the extra point.
Yeah, they're chasing
points.
So
it becomes a two-point play, Steve. 2 points.
I hear you, Sage. I know you saw me doing some weird things
here.
Yeah. I was looking something up because it was in my craw. It's one of a hot button I have about this whole Levante David thing.
How is your craw, by the way?
My craw's good.
Not craw.
I need to... put away some seeds.
All right, what'd you find? You found a nugget?
Put away some seeds for the winter.
Juice. He's got juice.
Well, Sage, you know what? This Levante David myth, it drives me a little nuts sometimes. His last 10 games with Greg Schiano, you know how many sacks he had? 2. and his last 10 games with Shiano. The last three games of the Mike Smith 2016 regime, Levante David had 4 sacks. So he's blitzed in this defense successfully in under Mike Smith. Just somehow they got away from it. It's not even, they don't have to reinvent the wheel here. They just have to get some better timing and some better calls. He's done it here. And you know what? You know how many quarterback hits he had as a rookie, Ira, in this the Shiano thing where he's lighting it up? 5 hits of the quarterback, and he's everybody's perception is he's blitzing left and right. That's one hit.
How many sacks did he have that season?
As a rookie, he had 1, 2, 2. So it gets a blown out of proportion. Well, Levante David out, granted.
Well, there was one season when he was all over the stat sheet.
I understand.
You understand?
I understand, but I'm just telling
you. And people are wondering, why can't you get back to that?
But it was
you
chunks.
Understand that.
It was chunks. It was a real hot streak. That's why I pointed out his last 10 games with Shiano, 2 sacks.
Now, you brought up takeaways, and you know what? I want to weigh in on that. Lee, the Jameis haters. And I'm not one of them, but I'm the guy that says if you go 4-8, I got a problem.
Don't talk to Lewis Riddick.
All right, I understand that, especially if you play like he did on Sunday. But the Jameis haters, they're always going to focus on the 2 picks. They're going to focus on it. But
and one was a freak.
But to me, the bigger problem, the bigger issue, they're not getting any takeaways. That's why you're losing the turnover battle. You're not getting any. You have 5 in 5 games. You have 1 pick. Little Justin Evans, who made a nice play. I forgot which game it was. Might have been the Philly game. But he picked off a pass. Read the play very well.
And he got steamrolled.
Steve, they're on pace for 3 interceptions. Steve, 3. That's a good half for Patrick Peterson.
I wish someone could have seen that.
3. Like, I'm leaning forward in my seat here.
Well, Ismus is working on the keyboard. You scream, and I'm like, you're trying to get the little kid's attention. Steve!
And Lee,
that's horrible, Ira.
Lee, what fueled the 5-game winning streak after the bye week of 2016? Takeaways.
Yeah.
They were doing it all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans, Seattle, beating them up. The Chiefs, beating them up. They don't have any takeaways. And, you know, you got to start up front with the pass rush. It's not as good as we thought it would be.
Yeah, there's only one guy.
And you're blitzing more than you thought you would. Remember, we thought, they can do it with 4 men, drop 7. Now, Steve, I'm going to throw this out there. I'm going to lean forward in my seat again. I think this is a point. This is a point.
Don't fall over.
Steve, this is a he's looking up nuggets again. I'm worried about
Steve,
him.
Steve, forgot his pen.
I wanted to double check. One of the things that got Lovey run.
May I continue?
Of course you can continue.
This is the Ira Kaufman podcast.
you're getting in my face. I'm getting back.
Let me throw this out, Lee. And you've heard this. And nobody's talked about the flip side, so I'm going to bring it up. One of the things we heard after the Chicago game and after the Atlanta game. Max protection. Mm-hmm. Max protection. They got 6-7 guys blocking, and you're only sending 4 or 5.
Chicago gamer.
Now, wait a minute.
Vinny Curry
I got the beautiful flip side to it, and I'm going to lean forward. Steve, I'm leaning forward. You ready?
Don't fall off that chair.
Go for it.
You're sending minimal guys out in coverage, and they're still wide open?
Yeah.
When you're not going 4 wide, you might be going 2 wide, and they're still wide open? That makes it even worse.
Yeah.
Even worse, Steve. Max protection. That's 6 guys or 7 guys and the quarterback. That's 8. You can only have 3 guys out. You might have a running back there. You might have 2 guys out. And they're still wide open.
Yeah.
Now I'm leaning forward on you, Lee. can you give me an answer to that, Lee? Can you give me an answer
I
to
cannot.
That? If they're not sending many guys
answer.
Out in the pattern, why is there no buck in the zip code?
Yeah, I can't give a logical answer at all. There's no logical answer.
There's no answer. Yeah. Dave, what do you got over there?
No, the logical answer is that's why they fired the coordinator because, and Dave Moore of the, obviously played for the Bucks and played for many, many years. He made the point on a radio interview that, the whole communication talk, bad communication. He said ultimately that communication starts with the coaches teaching the players. And, you could teach players. We can get 20 guys in to teach the same thing. Sometimes the message gets through. It's what makes a good teacher in fifth grade better than the other teacher in fifth grade teaching the same stuff. And Moore, who's very level-headed, say, hey, the teaching might be off and the message, the way it's being delivered, and that translates. Doesn't excuse the players, but you got to, if you're talking communication, you got to start with the coach.
Oddly enough, had Mike Smith pulled out that communication excuse again, I was going to ask him just what Steve and Dave Moore described. I said, is there something being garbled from when you direct it upstairs to the time it gets on the field?
I said to Steve Lee the other day, that I think the thing that is killing Buck fans about this defense, frustrating the heck out of them, is it's one thing if a guy makes a great catch, you know, and leaps over a guy.
Yeah.
These are uncontested.
Uncontested.
And that's the word that's killing Buck fans.
Yeah, it's inexcusable when you guys are so wide open.
There's a photo that someone Twittered Steve and I this morning. It was just a screenshot. And the Falcons had 2nd and 5, I think it was. 2nd and 5. They showed a picture of every one of the Bucks' secondary. Every one of them was lined up on the opposite side of the first down marker.
How could that be?
You're begging someone for a first down. And I replied. I said, and this is exactly why Julio Jones and Sanu were wide open on crossing patterns all day long Sunday. Crossing patterns all day long.
I don't know if, Steve, I don't know if the linebackers are not taking the proper drops. They're part of the problem.
Yes, you're right.
But, you know, who knows these linebackers better than the new man in town, Mr. Duffner. He's not the new man, but new man in charge. Duffner's got to crack down on these linebackers. They got to play better. They got to play differently. Mm-hmm. They got to play better.
Sage, the nugget I was going to give you, I wanted to double check, is back in 2015 with Lovie, they only got 2 picks from cornerbacks that whole season.
Wow.
Which is hard to do. Sterling Moore and Alter.
Sterling Moore.
What'd they end up with, about 9, 8?
Yeah. So, they're on a better pace because there was other guys doing the picks, but it's hard to do to have 2 picks from cornerbacks.
Again, soft, soft, soft.
Yeah.
Soft.
By the way, Ari, and this was a pet peeve of yours with Lovie, that you said he was so paranoid, or the players were so paranoid about not getting beat deep that they gave him that cushion because they'd rather get beat ahead, you know, in front of them rather than behind him. I can't remember who Illinois was playing, and you know I had to be bored if I turned on an Illinois game. They're so bad.
Oh, boy.
Whoever was the color analyst, I don't think it was Matt Millen, who, by the way, is not in good shape health-wise. It might have been a former Minnesota coach. His name escapes me. But anyway, they said Lovie demands that his players not get beat deep. That's why they're so far back. I immediately thought of you when I heard that.
You know the funny part of all this? With the conservative soft defense, they still give up too many chunk plays. And Cutter said that on Monday.
Yeah,
too many.
Oh, something he also said on Monday. You know, he has a sit down with Dan Lucas, and we mentioned Jameis a little earlier. This is the closest I ever heard Cutter coming to really scolding Jameis in public. He said there's one element of Jameis's game that is preventing him from being elite. And he said the guy works his tail off. He practices hard.
He wants to win.
Yeah, he said everything about him you love, but one thing. Inconsistency in the red zone. And he says when you're in a 1-score or two-score game and you throw a pick in the red zone, that will kill you. And he said that is the only thing preventing Jameis from being up there with Aaron Rodgers and the rest of the top-level quarterbacks is inconsistency in the red zone. And people, I wrote about it Wednesday morning on JoeBucksFan.com. People can go there and click on the video. The video's there. That's the closest I've ever seen Cutter publicly scolding Jameis.
You know, and it doesn't help when Eau Claire gets a penalty on 2nd and goal from the 2.
No.
That doesn't help, Steve.
And why are they not? I mean, look, you got Ryan Jensen on that specific play. You got Ryan Jensen on 1st and goal from the 2 after Humphreys does that.
They ran it.
But they didn't just run right out, you know, dead ahead, straight ahead, go over the top, get a yard and a half or fire it right through. That's why you bought Ryan Jensen.
And pay him
leap over the pile.
And that's, you know, Dirk Cutter was on the radio hour. We didn't get into this. It's on the radio Friday night. He specifically said, Ali Marpet is a top 10 interior lineman in the NFL. He specifically said guards, both sides, and center.
That counts 64 guards. You know, yeah.
So why aren't you just barreling past these guys? And that set up, you know.
So what run did they do with the Barber on that first down? Off tackle?
No, they went left, but it wasn't just a straight north and south run. Marpet did get blown up a little bit, but it's frustrating, you know. And on that first drive, and I'm going back to Lee's thing with Dan Lucas and Cutter sort of explaining that great means just not making those mistakes, even no matter how well you play otherwise. It's sort of what he was saying. It's like you can be really good, but if you want to be special, you can't do that. I guarantee in the building here, if you go, they looked at that opening drive in the Bucs. Jameis, he had a pick dropped in the end zone on the opening drive in the end zone. That would have been 3 if you're, you know, playing that game, but it doesn't matter. You can't do that, and that was the opening drive.
I'm glad
it didn't happen.
You know, it's still tough for me to pick apart Jameis Winston in a game that he scored 29 points, got no help from the defense in terms of field position. 0. And that's been going on with this team all year. Steve talked about it.
If Mike Evans gets out of bounds, it's not unreasonable to think they would have scored.
Yeah.
You know, that cost him 15, 20 seconds?
And I still don't like plays? And I still don't like the last play. I still don't like it.
You know what? That's
I think that play has a 2% chance.
Yeah, that's one of those plays. Had DeSean Jackson made that, I was talking to, I don't know who I was talking to in the locker room off the top of my head.
I thought Cutter said the play wouldn't have counted.
Well, if you look back, there was a play, a lateral to, I think, Humphreys.
Because the ball hit the ground in the last 2 minutes.
Cutter sort of explained that it wouldn't have counted.
Had he scored, let's say it would have counted, had he scored, to this day in NFL circles, people would still be raving about, what a great call, what a fantastic play, what a fantastic comeback, Jameis Winston, DeSean Jackson. You'd hear, and of course, since it didn't work, what a bonehead, what the hell's wrong with Cutter, that's damned if you do, those kind of things.
It is, and a pass from the 20 is a low percentage. To pass, you're probably not going to get it.
But
you might get a flag. You might get a flag.
Yeah, it was there to be made. It had been executed properly. It was there to be made. But what Steve made a point on your podcast on Tuesday, I think just screams. You've got all these weapons, and you can't go after O.J. Howard. You can't go after Evans. You can't go over fill in a blank, and you got to resort to a high school play. What does that say about Cutter's level of confidence?
But my problem with the whole percentages argument, it's good to get a little deeper into this, because the people are still talking about the play. I even heard it talked about on national
radio. Everything has to go right in that play. Everything.
Well, of course. But so Cutter says there aren't many percentage plays,
from the 20.
One play from the 20. Okay, well, if you're looking at the league percentage, most of the league does not have the targets that Cutter has, right? So let's flash forward to the Browns. Now, if they run that play with their crop of receivers, forget about the Bucs defense for a minute. They're crappy compared to what the Bucs have, and they paid for all these guys. I mean, we can still remember Jason Light smiling, saying Duncan ears, that's a long time ago already. But the percentages go way up when you have these guys. And you would think if you have these guys, right, if you have Brate and Howard and
Evans
and Godwin, who's a high flying young guy and makes can go up for the ball. If you have four guys, don't you design plays for the end zone in practice because you have these guys and you can up your percentages? But no, you run Jameis up the middle, fling it back to Humphreys, who's going to – I mean, it's ridiculous.
And Lee, if the ball falls incomplete on your pass, Buck fans don't scream because they say – they took their shot. Yeah.
You know what the number one chance of happening on that play is? Jameis Winston gets hurt.
Yeah, that's what went through my mind.
And that's smart? Come on,
when,
man.
When that play was in progress, the first thing I thought it was, you're running a quarterback draw, and the second thing was, Jameis is going to blow out his shoulder. While the play was in progress, that was what was going through my mind. Jameis is going to get his shoulder blown. He's going to get blown up by a linebacker. Bye-bye shoulder, end of the season. That's exactly what was going through. But I got a point for Steve. Steve, do you realize how many people's days you ruined by mentioning Duncan ears? I mean, there are people that go home and throw up.
Still drives me nuts. And fans keep saying it came close to working. Bouncing the ball to the receiver is not close to working.
Steve, what are we looking for Sunday? What are we looking for?
Well, you're looking for
free beer,
for free food, and cheerleaders.
By the way, I'm 2-3 this year, picking against the Bucks. I believe you're in first place.
We're tightened up. Lee's 2-3, right there with you. I'm 3-2.
So we're matching the Buck record, you and I, Lee.
Yeah.
Lockstep. Sage. Anything from the locker room today that you gleaned?
Well, I talked to Pierre Paul, who, again, is the only guy playing up to his salary, in my opinion.
That's one of the best moves they've made in years.
Yeah. Where would they be without him?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. And I threw out my theory. Move you around a little bit. You're a terror in training camp. Would you mind? Absolutely not. So if he doesn't mind, and DeKemper doesn't mind, let's get him out there against the Browns and not let those clowns know where he's going to line up. Kendall Beckwith said he's close. I said, you got a timetable? No, I'm not going to say that. But I think he's talking about weeks. He goes, it might be sooner than you think. He can't wait to get back out there. And frankly, the way he played for, I'd say, 2/3 of last season, they can't wait to get him back because they're not getting any plays from that side. That play, that strong side traditionally, that's just a guy to turn the play in. Beckwith makes some plays out there.
Well, he's also versatile.
And Duffner, in particular, he can't wait to get him back there, because with those three linebackers, you might be able to do some things.
All right, Sage, let me ask you this. And I'm not, I'm really not trying to arouse the lunatic fringe that Lee was talking about a little bit earlier in some ways. If Gerald McCoy doesn't play because of the calf injury, is
I know where this is going, Lee.
Is that a major loss to the defense? It's a simple question.
In theory, yes. He's a six-time Pro Bowler.
No theories. Is it a major loss on Sunday without McCoy? Is that going to change your pick?
Absolutely not, because, quite frankly, I think McCoy's having just an okay season.
Yeah.
Just okay.
Mediocre.
And I thought he was going to have a big season.
Well, I think we all
did. With Pierre Paul off his right shoulder, and Pierre Paul playing well off his right shoulder, it takes a lot of the burden off, and it takes a lot of the blockers
away from
McCoy. He's played okay.
I'm with Villa, you know, especially with Villa coming
in. I
wanted
to see more Villa last week.
Well, you know what? When Villa comes in, people don't run up the middle. And, of course, the Florida State fans out there, they drafted that guy 19 overall. He's just a run stuffer. Well, you prefer guys running up the middle? Is that what you prefer? You know, if a guy's certain Derwin, a guy by the name of Derwin, you know, people are screaming how light was you feeling, you know, oh, he's awful. He's terrible. Well, 15 other teams passed on this guy, too. If these GMs thought that he was Jesus Christ of safeties, they probably would have drafted him, too.
I wouldn't mind seeing Vea and JPP playing inside. I like that combination. Now, that begs the question, who's going to play right defensive end? And it brings me to my pet project. Where is number 57? Where is he, Steve? That's a story for another day.
Well, maybe Duffner frees Noah Spence.
Somebody's got to free the man.
Maybe.
Or cut him.
I mean, if
free him or cut him.
I agree with you on the cutting, because if he's on the roster and he's not playing,
he's taking up a spot.
What's the point? There's no point.
Taking up a spot for what? Some piece of garbage off the sidewalk that can't find a job in October? Come on.
Think about all the defensive help that they've needed, right? So you're going to carry Spence and not play him? There's no chance of him helping the defense. And you've got a third quarterback that you don't need. How's that helping anything out?
Yeah, I'm not into the cut Spence if you don't play him, because what's out there? Like, you know, a glorified AAF wannabe? There's nothing out there. So, Spence, at least you've seen him do some things. You know him.
But, Lee, don't you have to dress him? Don't you have to dress him?
I guess it comes down to special teams. Cutter's really big on
that. Is that what we're going to talk about, a second-round defensive end, because he's not contributing
on
special
teams? We'll see
if
he plays, Ira. So far, special teams, worst return, kick return yardage in the NFL. How about that?
When's the last time the Bucs got rid of a second-round pick when it wasn't involved behavioral issues? When have they got
Aguayo.
Rid of, what's that?
Aguayo.
Yeah, because he was completely awful. I don't know if Spence is that bad.
Anyway, who's going to make some picks for this week? Who's going to do it?
All right, I'll lead off, Sage, since you seem like you don't
want to. You're in first place.
You don't want to go. I got to pick the Bucs because I simply can't pick a bad team with a rookie quarterback.
Three losses are by 3 points, Steve. They've been
competitive. That. Look, they're just like the Falcons were a bad team. The Bucs,
the Browns.
The Browns are a bad football team, so I'm not going to pick a losing team to come in here and win. And I think the Bucs offense is for real. I think everything they've done so far has shown that they are for real, and they're fully healthy. And Jameis being in another game, getting a full game in, I think can only help. So I got to pick the Bucs 27-17.
All right, I'll go second. I'm also not picking against the Bucs this week, Lee. I can't do it. You're facing a rookie quarterback. Duffner's going to do everything in his power to make the guy uncomfortable. I'll say Noah Spence recovers two fumbles, and the Bucs win 27-20. How do you like that? Are you going to make it unanimous, DeKemper?
It's going to be the kiss of death for the Bucs. I'm picking them to win. I'm going to pick a close game, and I'm going to pick the defense to have a halfway decent game. Decent for the Bucs standards. I'm going to go 24-23 Bucs.
By the skin of their teeth.
Yep. But a win's a win. You'll hear that.
Will Buck fans outnumber Cleveland fans, Steven?
Cleveland travels well. One of those teams, a lot of fans around. Even if you go to a Rays game, there's always a lot of Indians fans there consistently.
Heavy Ohio influence in the Bay Area.
Big time. So, look, the Bucs fan base is not exactly energized, but it is supposed to be a beautiful day on Sunday, like the first cool day of the fall season. So, by Florida standards, anyway.
I got to do that tailgate Sunday show right on the field And the last time I did it, which was the Eagles game,
you melted.
I melted. So I'm bringing a white towel. Don't read into that. I'm bringing a white towel.
All right, Tarkanian over here.
Jerry Tarkanian.
Anything else, Ira? Anything else you feel need to share from your show with Derek Brooks? Anything? I mean, that's a big deal to talk to Brooks off the record on the ousting of a coordinator.
I don't think he wanted Smith to go. 2 or 3 weeks ago, I asked him about it, and he said it's the players' execution. They're not doing what they've been told. I disagree with Derek in this respect. Smith had a bye week to get things fixed, and they came out and scored 3 touchdowns on their first 3 possessions.
Right away.
End of story, Lee. End of story.
Yeah, well, I've got 2 weeks. So I'm going to go through every snap.
Every snap.
I don't know what team he was watching, but wasn't the Bucs.
I don't think people can say Mike Smith wasn't given a chance. I don't think you can say that.
That's true. And by the way, I know, Ira, you think this way. We get no glee, no joy whatsoever. Mike Smith is one of the classiest acts I've ever had to deal with in the NFL. At the end of the day, if you don't do your job, it's a business. I don't care how nice of a guy you are, you got to go.
This is an opportunity for Duffner, Steve. It's a big opportunity.
It's a great opportunity for Mike Smith to play golf. The guy loves golf.
You see where.
Hey, he's getting paid 6 or 7 figures to golf now.
Florida, the courses. It's
by the
October.
Way, Lee, did you run into Arthur Blank after the game and did you ask him why he called me Irv for 10 years?
No, I was busy. I was busy trying to get Cutter to say something nasty about kickers.
And he signed a Rich McKay.
No, I did not see him.
I did see
D. Orlando Ledbetter.
Oh, with the bow tie?
Yeah, Mr. Bow tie.
How about Raheem? See Raheem?
No, I did not.
Okay.
Just to give some people some inside baseball here. When I go out on the road, I know what Steve can access as far as information and what he cannot. He can access Buccaneers Radio Network. He can access the interviews on the website. So I try to stay, when I see T.J. Reeves, I try to stay away from him. I stay away from the press conferences outside of
Andy James. So you're talking Isaiah Johnson.
Guys like that. Yeah. But anyway, I went to the Cutter's press conference. Yeah.
Normally don't do that.
I normally don't do that because I had a specific question. I basically asked him in so many words, I'm like, talk about the hex kickers have on you.
I saw that.
Because ever since he got here as offensive coordinator, the Bucs kicking game has been a freaking nightmare. Been an absolute nightmare. And I asked Cutter. I mean, he was political. He didn't want to trash the guy. But body language, he wanted to say, Lee, I just want to strangle a kicker.
By the way, I want to wish Matt Bryant a speedy recovery. He's one of the good guys. He's had a heck of a career. And I hope he comes back before the season's out. If not, that he comes back fully healthy next year.
Well, I just hope this defense responds and the team wins, because otherwise it's going to be torches in the streets next week will be the theme of everything, and rightfully so.
Here's what Ira misses about Atlanta. In addition to, you know, the self-serve ice cream that they have there.
Nice.
Which that's right up your alley.
Nice.
Every chair where there was a credentialed reporter, every chair, there was a tin of cookies.
A tin?
A tin.
How many did you bring back with you?
Well, I brought one, and Dan Lucas brought back one.
Get out of here, Steve, on that note.